102. Marcus. On numb feet, he walked next to his father as they exited the Curia, Senator Domitius heading toward a large litter carried by 8 servants. I'll walk. His father glanced at him, and Marcus realized with a start that he was now taller than him, that his father, who had once held unquestionable authority in his eyes, was slender and fragile, his eyes marked with wrinkles and his hands with age spots. Of course you would, he answered. How silly of me. I shall walk with you. Do not feel obligated, Senator. A brisk walk clears the head and it will give your... He broke off. My wife, time to prepare the house. Gesturing at one of the litter bearers, he said, run ahead and tell Drusilla that Legatus Marcus will be our guest tonight. The man sprinted up the street, leaving Marcus and his father to follow, the litter and a dozen men of the household guard trailing after. Lifting a hand to his mouth and coughing, Senator Domitius murmured, we are being watched. No, I suppose you know that. It's no surprise. They walked in silence for several minutes, passing under dripping aqueducts, civilians and peregrini alike stepping aside at the sight of them. What are the dark shores like? His father asked abruptly. They are the focus of so much of our attention, and yet you're the first to have actually seen them. Not answering the question, Marcus instead posed his own. Cassius hasn't gotten any of the other Marin to talk. No. They've remained reticent, I'm afraid. Though he has left off in executing them. Good. I gave my word, and I'd be unhappy to hear it had been broken against my will. Even so, Marcus suspected that Cassius was still availing himself of dark rooms in the slums, in the attempt to extricate more information from the captive Marin. It was the currency with which he did business, more so than even gold. Valerius has been militant in their defense. Do you know why? The mention of the senator's name caused uneasiness and guilt to rise in his guts, a reminder that the girl he'd murdered had friends, family. And given Marcus hadn't been arrested upon arrival, they likely had no idea what had become of her. Before his father could answer, a rotten apple flew past Marcus's face.
Sell pig!
A peregrini woman shouted. Then she threw something else in his direction. Marcus stepped out of the way, but his legs were still splattered with overripe tomato as the mess struck the paving stones. Apologies, his father murmured, snapping his fingers at the guard to clear a path. The peregrini grow bold of late. They do not favor Cassius and strike out against his supporters. Which he, no matter how much he hated Cassius, was one of. And Marcus found himself wanting in equal parts to fall to his knees and beg for the woman's forgiveness, and to scream in her face that he had no more power in this than she did. But instead, he walked forward, refusing to look at any of the people who shouted insults and threw rotten food in his wake. They wove through the narrow winding paths leading up the hill, the overhang of the trees providing respite from the beating sun, though Marcus couldn't help but notice that his father was panting, sweat running in rivulets down the sides of his face. Do you need to pause, Senator? No, I'm quite fine. His father glanced back at the litter trailing him, then started up a series of steps. I remember when you... Things change. Indeed. The path forked. To go to the left would lead eventually to Cassius's home, but they carried upward to the top of the hill, a place Marcus hadn't been since he was 8 years old. And yet it was as familiar as though it were yesterday. The trees were somewhat taller, but the ancient walls between trees were identical, as were the bits and pieces of the grand villas visible through the dense gardens, the air thick with the scent of flowers. And faintly Marcus could make out the sound of the surf pounding against the shores at the base of the cliffs far below this last row of homes. This is Valerius's home, his father said between breaths, in case you were concerned over the welfare of the girl. Marcus started, for a moment believing his father spoke of Lydia before realizing he meant Tariana. His chest tightened painfully as he glanced through the closed gates, faded memories of sitting on a library floor, looking at the illustrations in books with a small girl with long dark hair and green eyes. She'd been his friend, perhaps his only friend at that age. And he'd murdered her. I remember. Continuing down the path, they reached the gates to the Domitius property, which sat at the very pinnacle of the hill. One of the litter-bearers hurried ahead of them to unlatch the gate, swinging it open and then lowering his gaze as they passed. A path made of tiny squares of white stone wound through the towering trees, past fountains featuring nude women that sprayed water from their fingertips and toes, filling the air with a tinkling music that he'd recognize 100 years from now. Pots of bright blooming flowers buzzed with bees, and the path branched again and again, a maze he'd explored daily as a child.
"Please be kind to your mother,"
his father said softly as they rounded a bend and the villa appeared, all columns and porticos and colored marble.
"It was my decision, not hers, and I don't think she'll ever forgive me for it. Do you regret it?"
The words exited his lips before Marcus had the chance to think about whether he truly wanted to hear the answer. Senator Domitius paused, staring up at the wide doors, the metal insert with 12 squares depicting famous moments of family history.
"No,"
he finally answered, "for I believe the legions saved your life, and that they would have consumed your brothers." It was an answer that denied all culpability for what he'd endured, and Marcus balled one hand into a fist before forcing it to relax. The past could not be undone, although it seemed he was about to face it, whether he wanted to or not. Pushing open the door, his father stepped into the atrium, a square opening in the ceiling revealing blue sky. Beneath it was a large golden basin that collected water during the rains. Marble benches set between alcoves that contained busts depicting Domitius patriarchs, potted ferns providing splashes of green against the white walls. But Marcus's gaze went immediately to the two girls standing at the far end, one of them arguing vehemently with an older female servant.
"I don't wish to go," she said, stomping a sandaled foot. "There is nothing to do in the country villa." "Your mother says you must, Domina,"
the servant pleaded, then her eyes snapped to Marcus and his father.
"Apologies, Dominus."
She dropped to her knees.
"We were to be gone before your return."
"Ah, yes. The Legatus walks more swiftly than is my custom, so you are not to blame."
Marcus's father waved a hand to the girls.
"Legatus, these are my daughters, Faustina and Julia."
His younger sisters, neither of whom he'd seen in nearly 13 years. Julia had been only a baby when he'd left for Lessendor, and Faustina, an irritating toddler who'd ripped pages from his books, now 12 and 14. Both girls inclined their heads, echoing each other with,
"Well met, Legatus."
"Well met," he replied, unnerved when two pairs of blue-gray eyes fixed on him, for it was like looking into a mirror.
"They are off to the country," his father said. "It seemed a prudent choice, given tensions within the city.
They could be sent to the far side of the Empire, and it still wouldn't be enough to keep them safe if Cassius decided to turn on Marcus's family, but all he said was,
"Wise decision." "Off with you," his father said. "Already the hour grows late."
The girls obediently followed the servant woman out the front door, and as it closed, Marcus asked,
"Do they know who I am?"
"No, only that they had an older brother who went to the legions. Telling them more was unnecessary."
The word stung, though Marcus wasn't entirely sure why. Shoving aside the emotions, he followed his father down a corridor. Sconces of perfumed oil scented the air, but beneath it, the faint breeze carried the smell of the sea, and he inhaled deeply, hoping it would steady his heart for what was to come. But nothing could have prepared him. His mother sat straight-backed on a couch, ankles crossed beneath her, hands folded in her lap. Her blonde hair, which hung in long ringlets, was held back from her face with combs made of gold and pearl, exactly how she'd worn it when he was a boy, although now it was shot through with silver. She wore a gown typical of a patrician woman, tourmaline silk that left one shoulder bare, the other crisscrossed with delicate golden chains that matched the belt cinching the waist. Though she must have heard their approach, she did not move from her study of the tiled floor. Then she took a shuddering breath and rose, lifting her face to meet his gaze.
"We are pleased to have you in our home, Legatus."
"Thank you for your hospitality."
It was a struggle to get the words out, a struggle to breathe. Silence fell between them, the tension of far too many things unsaid keeping anything from being said at all. Then she stumbled across the few paces between them and fell to her knees in front of him, pressing her face against Marcus's shin.
Forgive me. Please forgive me. I should never have let him take you. Should have protected you, run away with you, whatever it took to keep you safe.
The world swam around him. Details of the room, new and old, coming in and out of focus. Domina. He didn't know what else to call her. Couldn't bear to call her mother. She looked up at him, face streaked with tears, her pale blue eyes swollen and red.
He told me the physician said you would die no matter what we did. That if we allowed you to go instead of your brother, that at least we'd have one son who survived. But I have regretted it. Every single day.
He felt dizzy and ill, nausea rising in his stomach, every inch of him wanting to escape the situation, to escape this confession.
For the longest time, I thought you were dead.
She was sobbing, her fingernails digging into his legs.
That you were buried in a numbered grave at Lessendor. And he...
She spit the word at his father.
Never deigned to tell me otherwise.
It was for your own good, his father protested. I feared you'd lose yourself and go after him if you knew the truth, and we all know what the consequences of that would have been.
Damn the consequences!
His mother screamed the words, and Marcus flinched.
I deserve them. You deserve them. He is our son, and we sacrificed him because he was sick.
He was going to pass out. Blindly, Marcus reached out and caught hold of a table, the vase on it rocking. Then he heard the measured click of heels and his sister's voice cut through the air.
Oh, get up, mother. Don't subject him to your dramatics.
Swishing past him, Cordelia reached down and hauled their mother to her feet, pushing her bodily down on the couch. Picking up a decanter of wine, she poured a generous glass and forced it into their mother's hand. She filled another glass with lemon water and finally turned to face Marcus, pushing the glass onto him with the same authority she had their mother.
Perhaps some refreshment before we unearth the family skeletons.
He drank deeply, the room slowly ceasing its rotations, allowing him to focus on his elder sister. She wore her blonde hair in a tight coronet of braids, her blue-gray eyes rimmed with kohl, and the silk of her dark blue dress curved outwards over her stomach. Pregnant. Yet another life whose safety he needed to worry for.
It's good to see you alive, brother.
Cordelia's jaw trembled. Then she wrapped her arms around his neck, her necklace clanking against his armored chest.
I'm not sorry for the things I said to you, but I did come to regret that our last meeting ended in anger. I thought that would ever be how you'd remember me.
How is it that you two had opportunity to speak? Their father demanded.
Cordelia let go of his neck, stepping back a pace.
Not your concern, father.
To Marcus, she said,
perhaps you'd care to take a moment before dinner to rid yourself of the city's dust and change into...
Her brow furrowed.
More comfortable attire. I noted a young man from Lessendor was here delivering a package, so I assume they sent you what you might need.
Thank you. Inclining his head to his mother, he said, Domina, Senator. Then followed Cordelia out of the room. She led him through the corridors and up to the second level, bypassing the room that had once been his, and stopping in front of one that had belonged to his brother.
My husband is keeping Gaius occupied, but they'll both be along shortly.
Her fingers on the latch, she hesitated.
I'm sorry for her behavior. I'd hoped to arrive before you to prevent her dramatics.
It's fine. She gave a slight shake of her head.
It's not. She behaves as though she were not culpable in the decision, as though she were blameless. I half think she's managed to convince herself that she's the victim.
He hated that word. I don't need you to protect me, Cordelia. Not from her. Or anything else.
Habit.
She opened the door.
I need to speak with you alone after dinner. There are things you need to know that by necessity must be kept between us.
Concerning what? Her jaw worked from side to side.
The Valerius girl, Lydia, she...
A servant appeared up the corridor and she broke off.
Later. You need a clear mind for the conversation ahead.
Unnerved in every possible way, Marcus entered the room, closing the door behind him and flipping the latch. The space was filled with every possible luxury, but he ignored it all, going instead to the open window, which faced Valerius's property, where Tyrianna was, even now.
He hated being away from her, not only because he couldn't ensure her safety, but because without her, he felt not himself. Around her was the only time he felt he could truly breathe, and deep down, he knew that a selfish part of his soul was glad Cassius and the Senate had refused to accept the Cybern path, because it meant more time with her. Lowering himself onto a bench, he rested his elbows on his knees and his face in his hands, finally allowing himself to think about the moment when she'd asked him to give it all up, to forsake his legion, to be with her, to remember the decision he'd made. Not that it mattered now. The decision was out of both their hands, and the only path was forward. Unbuckling his armor, he left it scattered on the floor, then availed himself of the basin of fresh water, his nose wrinkling at the perfumed soap that had been left for him. Sitting next to the bed was a chest, and within, he found several small knives suitable for hiding away, along with folded formal attire. Grimacing, he pulled it on, hating the bulk and bothersome folds of the toga, but knowing he couldn't very well go to dinner in a legionnaire's tunic. There was a mirror on the wall, not the cheap polished brass used by the masses, but silvered metal, covered with flawless glass, and he stepped in front of it, staring at his reflection. This is who you might have been, who you should have been. Not a soldier, not a commander, but the heir to one of the most powerful families in the Empire, destined to take his father's seat on the Senate, and when the time was right, to run for consul and win. A patrician, a politician, one of the pompous pricks he hated more than anything on Wreath. Twisting away from the mirror, Marcus pulled on the leather sandals that had come with the clothes. Then, with a knife tucked in his belt, he exited the room and made his way downstairs. Faint conversation, along with the scent of food and wine, filtered their way into his nose. And he entered to find his parents and Cordelia lounging on couches. They weren't alone. A man in his 20s perched on the corner of Cordelia's couch, a glass of wine in one hand. Though his skin was the golden hue common to those of Cell heritage, his hair was such a dark brown as to verge on black, and his eyes were a dark hazel. He rose at the sight of Marcus, extending a hand.
Legatus, I'm pleased to finally make your acquaintance. When she isn't cursing some of your recent decisions, Cordelia speaks highly of you.
Grasping the man's forearm, Marcus glanced at his sister, who lifted one shoulder.
Tiberius and I don't keep secrets from each other. He knows everything, so speak as freely before him as you would me.
You shouldn't be sharing family secrets, sister, a voice said from behind, and Marcus turned to find his younger brother lurking in the corner. No offense, Tiberius.
None taken. Tiberius sipped at his wine. You have a great deal to lose, Gaius. I understand entirely. Pushing away from the wall, Gaius crossed the room to take a seat on an empty couch, and Marcus noted he took care to keep a healthy distance between them.
Tell me, brother, do those living in the Dark Shores curse your name the way they do in Chersum? Indeed, the way they do across the entire Empire, or have you not progressed so far yet in your conquest?
Gaius, shut your bloody mouth,
Cordelia snapped.
Cordelia, language,
their mother said, sitting upright.
You've the foul mouth of a soldier.
Then she blanched, glancing at Marcus.
Your pardon. I meant the rank and file, of course, not an officer.
This night was going to be the purest form of misery. Drink? Tiberius asked. I'm afraid it's a serve-yourself affair. Even the most loyal servants tend to have loose tongues, especially when it's about matters that might earn them some coin. I'm fine with water. Thank you.
I'd heard that about you.
Tiberius filled a glass and handed it to him.
Straight-headed, they say. Stickler for the rules. Not one for unnecessary chatter.
Marcus met his gaze, not answering. He didn't like this man knowing his secrets, not when he'd sacrificed so much to keep them that way.
Perhaps we might address the matter at hand.
Having been silent the entire time, his father finally spoke.
Cassius holds a great deal of leverage over this family, and insight into how else he might use it against us is worth knowing.
I suppose that depends on what his end goal is. Marcus leaned against a column, then took a sip of his water.
You and Tiberius here know him best, so perhaps you might provide me with some insight.
His father and Tiberius exchanged uneasy glances. Marcus made a face.
You sit with him on the Senate.
hear the policies he proposes, the gossip. Whereas I've been living in a tent on the far side of the world, entirely cut off from all of this.
Power, Tiberius answered slowly, and all that comes with it. He's had a taste of being in control, and I think there is little he wouldn't do to retain it.
So he'll run for another term as consul.
Undoubtedly, Tiberius answered, and as much as it pains me to say it, with your successes, he will very likely win. If your arrival had come after the coming summer's election, he might well have lost the consulship.
Not unexpected, but Marcus still struggled not to grimace. My intention was to refrain from contact with the Empire until after his term was through, but circumstances conspired against me.
You truly expect us to believe that?
Gaius snapped.
You're here because you want more men, so you can conquer more of the world and increase your own fame. And don't think for a second, brother, that we don't see you doing it as an attempt to make a point to us.
Marcus's temper flared, his fingers curling into a fist. But beating Gaius bloody last time hadn't solved a damn thing. Every time you open your mouth, useless words pour forth like shit from an ass, Gaius. Do us all a courtesy and remain silent unless you have something helpful to add, because I assure you, choosing to travel an unmapped stem into the depths of Cybern is something only an idiot or a madman would do. And I am neither.
You overstep.
His brother's face purpled as he turned on their father.
Are you truly going to stand there and allow him to speak to me in such a crass and offensive manner?
Oh, be silent,
their mother snapped.
Or if you cannot, take this.
She shoved a bottle of wine into his hand.
And go complain to the flowers in the garden. Perhaps they will care about your petty jealousy.
Gaius glowered, but remained silent and took his seat.
How was it that you crossed with just the Marin girl? Cordelia asked, her brow furrowed.
We were separated from my men by hostiles, he answered. We took refuge in some ruins, and the floor collapsed, revealing the Xenthir. It was either die by their hands, or risk the path.
Ah,
she replied, but the furrow in her brow remained as though she knew he wasn't giving the whole of the story. But that is irrelevant, he added. What's done is done. All that matters now is what Cassius is going to do with this victory, which he is sure to claim as his own. And how he's going to use this family to hold on to his consulship.
He'll push us to campaign for him. There is no doubt of that, his father answered. And for the coin to fund it. I wouldn't put it past him to bankrupt us in pursuit of his goals, knowing full well that we are in no position to deny him the funds.
I'd say it's better to be broke than to hang from the gallows, but you would handle destitution very poorly, father,
Cordelia said, shifting on the couch.
For your own sake, you might grow a pair and stand your ground against him.
Cordelia!
Their mother snapped, but his sister only ignored her.
Marcus is Selendor's golden boy,
she continued.
He is making Cassius look very good, and if Cassius reveals that you broke the laws of the child tithes, it won't only be father and Gaius who swing, it will be Marcus too. I don't think he'll risk it.
Marcus wished he had her confidence. I'm replaceable, Cordelia. With Titus, who, I'll remind you, is Cassius's son. Or if he can't get the Senate to agree to it, then one of the many other men who have the same training and skills I do. He turned to his father. My advice is to do what he asks.
No matter the consequences,
Cordelia demanded.
He's a tyrant, and if you think he doesn't have grander ambitions than 2 terms as consul, you are an idiot.
Ambition or not, the law limits him. Tiberius cleared his throat.
Laws can be changed. Already he's amended those related to the child tithes to the legions. In a year, families will either have to pay or give up 4th sons as well. The coin is nothing to those who have it, but those without means will lose another child.
Marcus's chest tightened, the hate that had been directed at him by the citizens becoming all too understandable.
And his argument for the need of expanding the legions has only been strengthened by your return, Tiberius continued. As soon as a path, one more viable than that to Cybern, is discovered, he will send more legions through without delay. To make a name for himself and to secure the wealth that Marin ledgers show the Dark Shores has. There are limits, his father argued.
You make him sound as though he aims for the power of an emperor, which the Senate will never grant. Salandor rid itself of such a position for a reason.
And yet what are we but an empire without an emperor? Cordelia said. I think that's exactly how Cassius envisions himself.
You're being emotional, Cordelia, which is no wonder given your condition, their father said. You are caught up on semantics and speak of that which you don't understand.
Half of Salandor's power rests on the strength of semantics, Cordelia retorted. And unlike you, I see clearly and without fear for my own neck.
Exactly, Gaius rose. Easy for you and Tiberius to stand on principle when neither of you risk being sent to hang.
Even if our lives were on the line, it would change nothing.
She rose to meet him.
You're a coward.
Gaius lifted a hand to slap her, and Marcus moved to grab it, but Tiberius had already stepped in front of his wife.
Enough. This quarreling yields no dividends. Let us turn our heads to how we might mitigate Cassius's control over us without catastrophic consequences.
If you mean, can we assassinate him and solve our woes? The answer is likely no.
Marcus drained the rest of his water. He's too clever not to have contingencies in play to make us pay if we move against him. Otherwise, I'd have slit his throat while he slept. Rather than the brutality shocking them, their faces only registered disappointment it wasn't an option.
He holds all the cards in the game between us, Marcus continued. And even if he did lose the consulship, he would not lose his ability to play them. So make your choice. Accommodate him or live with the consequences of crossing him. This conversation is a waste of breath.
I take it you've made your choice? Cordelia asked.
He surveyed them, these people whose blood he shared, whose lives he'd protected, though they hadn't given him the same courtesy. They were sly and conniving and ambitious, cell patricians to the core. But he'd known that, even as he'd backed a tyrant in order to keep them safe. Why? They didn't deserve it. Not really. Their lives weren't worth more than those who'd suffer and die as the result of Cassius being in power, and part of him wondered if Gaius hadn't seen to the heart of it, in that he'd had something to prove.
I made my decision a long time ago, he said. Do what you will, but I won't have this family's blood on my hands.
Then you're just as much a coward as the rest of the family.
Marcus stepped closer to his sister, shoving Tiberius back when he tried to move between them.
Allow me to remind you, Cordelia, that you could end this, that you could go before the Senate and confess this family's crimes, that you could bear the burden of this family's destruction. After all, you have the least to lose.
He searched her eyes, so similar in color to his own, then leaned down so they were nose to nose.
But it's easier to get me to do the dirty work, isn't it?
Cordelia didn't so much as blink.
If it were my secret to tell, I would fall on my knees before all of Salandriel and confess. But more than anyone else, Marcus, it's yours.
Scowling, Marcus turned away.
I need some air.
He strode out into the gardens, barely seeing the greenery and statuary, and went to a large fountain depicting nude lovers entwined in an embrace, water spraying from their mouths. It hadn't been here when he was a child, and he stared at it, wishing with all his heart that he'd never come back here.
I need to speak to you in private.
He turned to see Cordelia standing behind him, her expression grim.
About what?
She hesitated, then met his gaze.
About the Marin girl, Tariana. You need to part ways with her.
His irritation that yet another person was raising this issue clouded the more pressing question of how she knew.
Talk to the Senate, or Cassius. Neither seem inclined to allow me to part ways with her.
Cordelia huffed out an annoyed breath.
I'm talking about her role as your whore.
You even think of calling her that, and this conversation is over.
And there's the proof. You're not usually so easily baited, especially not into revealing your secrets.
Scowling at her, Marcus said,
It's none of your blasted business who is or isn't in my bed, Cordelia.
Except that it is. Everything you do, every choice you make, impacts our family, and so I'll make it my business.
She shifted her weight, fussing with the folds of her dress.
Especially when what you're doing gives Cassius more leverage.
What difference does my relationship with Tariana make?
He demanded, despite the question being woefully naive. Cassius wielded information like a weapon.
Tiberius told me that eyebrows rose during your meeting with the Senate. You've a reputation for never unnecessarily endangering your men, but despite the Cybern Path being a woefully ill-equipped avenue for retreat, you argued in Terriana's favor. Your bias toward the Marin is apparent, and that undermines everything you say on the matter.
He knew that. But what else could he have done? We'll be gone again soon enough.
You still need to end it. Your being with her is immoral, Marcus. She's your prisoner, and all the sweet words and passionate embraces in the world won't change that.
His jaw tightened, and he didn't answer. This was always the way with Cordelia. She used the truth, knowing it would do the fighting for her. I didn't make her do anything, if that's what you're accusing me of. It was her choice.
Which doesn't excuse you in the slightest.
As if he didn't know that. As if he hadn't been willing to give up everything in order to make what was between him and Terriana right.
End it.
No!
The word tore from his lips, and he jerked to his feet, pacing back and forth before leveling a finger at his sister. I have given up everything. I won't give up her unless she wills it. Cordelia looked away, lowering her face and rubbing at the side of her belly as though soothing the child within.
I didn't want to bring this up, but you give me little choice.
Why stop now?
Fine.
She squared her shoulders.
Did you kill Lydia Valerius?
Of all the things for her to say, he hadn't expected that. You know the answer.
I suspect the answer. You've never admitted it.
Because it was easier to pretend it had never happened that way. Yes, I killed her.
Personally, by your own hand.
Between his teeth, he said, yes. I drowned her in Cassius's baths and put her down the drain. Happy? Not entirely how it had gone, but the result was the same. She flinched, lifting a hand to press her fingers to her mouth. Softly, she said,
he thought it was something like that. Not you, specifically, but that she'd been killed in the baths.
Who?
Her father.
Senator Appius Valerius, the man who even now had Terriana in his home. Marcus's blood ran cold.
We've become close in recent months,
Cordelia continued,
unified by our mutual hatred of Cassius, though Appius believes our motivations entirely political. But he confessed to Tiberius and me his belief that Cassius, having used his betrothal to Lydia to secure the consulship, decided to have her killed, rather than to go through with the wedding.
He's not wrong.
I know.
Cordelia's jaw worked back and forth. Then she said,
did Cassius tell you why he wanted her dead?
No. Only that she was a liability and that he wanted it done. And he hadn't pressed for more details. From what he said to her in her final moments, Lydia had clearly been publicly disparaging him, so I assumed that was the reason.
Oh, Marcus, everyone disparages Cassius, even his followers. Even if she'd loathed him, he wouldn't have cared enough to kill her.
His pulse was galloping, his stomach hollow. Why then?
Because she was connected to the Marin.
Reaching up, Cordelia caught hold of his hand, pulling him onto the bench next to her.
Lydia had few friends. Never mind that she was bookish and peculiar in her pursuits. Her blood wasn't patrician, and you know how we can be.
It felt like a vice was closing around his chest, his breath coming too fast.
Appius told me she had one close friend. Closer than close, in truth, for Lydia loved this girl like a sister. A Marin girl.
Terriana. He could barely get her name out.
Yes.
His sister squeezed his hand tight.
That's why you need to end it, Marcus. Because imagine what it will do to Terriana if she discovers she's sleeping with the man who murdered her dearest friend.